Colectivo Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
Good evening and welcome to Raíces and Espejos de Aztlán. My name is Lewis Head and I'll be with you for Espejos and also Raíces later on all the way to 10 o'clock. And this evening I got the great pleasure to welcome to our studios here at KUNM, Adrián Sandoval, Adrián, who is the director of the New Mexico Highlands University Center for the Education and Study of Diverse Populations. You see how I get that right every time, don't I? I've gotten used to it. And just a little bit of disclosure that I came to know Adrián in my work at Polk Middle School in the South Valley. The center is an important partner with Polk, but a lot of other folks in the community as well. And so, Adrián, it's great to have you here. Welcome to Espejos de Aztlán.
Luis, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for the grand welcome. Appreciate it.
And I can say a lot about you, but I think I want you to talk about yourself, because this is about you, not me talking about you, but you talking about yourself. So tell us about where you're from and you know, how you've ended up where you're at.
Sure. I'm originally from Las Vegas, New Mexico, Vegueño de corazón. And being from northern New Mexico, in this case, northeastern New Mexico, you know, you grow up within an amazing culture, an amazing net, safety net, support, multiple examples of leaders in our communities over multiple years. And growing up there, I'm very appreciative of just the cultural rootedness that it gave me. The friends, the family, extended family members that have really supported me throughout the years. And we moved from there when I was like 14, Lewis, and came out here to the bigger city, Albuquerque, and lived out on the west side. And it was interesting. I graduated from West Mesa High School, and I have very fond memories of being there, and then attended UNM, had no inclination as to really, you know, what direction I was going to take or even how to take it. Luckily, my sister was there to support and guide, and my mom as well. And I eventually became an educator, and through those multiple experiences as a bilingual educator, I at the secondary level, I basically began to you know, look for different opportunities to continue to grow as a person and as a professional. And worked in a variety of capacities, and one of those was CESDP. Mm-hmm. And I was recruited there for a number of years, and decided to come back after multiple years with Dual Language Education in New Mexico. Quick shout out to them. And super happy to be back with CESDP and do some of the amazing work that we're doing and try to continue to grow it.
Tell us more how, you know, because the whole thing of language and cultural preservation, and I don't want to limit it to cultural preservation because it's also about transformation over time. There's a lot to talk about with that. But how you became attracted to that? What was it that motivated you?
Oh, wow. Again, being Native New Mexican and all the wrinkles of reality that are connected to that. And when I say that, I'm thinking about being, you know, mestizo, Indo-Hispano, and really relating to that. You know, having grandparents share with us our oral history and really describe to us, you know, who we are, what have been the multiple connections over the generations. I was part of that growing up, and being very keyed into who we are as families and, you know, what our connections are. And then also within my immediate family, there was always a desire to elevate those cultural and linguistic realities, really put them on a pedestal as something that should be desirable, something that should be conserved, valued in a lot of different ways, practiced actively. And so that very quickly became something that inspired me as an undergrad here at UNM to really explore different coursework that would reconnect me in a variety of ways, even much more deeply, right? Really began to root me in a variety of ways to understand not only identity, but also responsibility, connectedness to multiple communities here in New Mexico.
Yeah, thanks for that. You became the director of CESDP, the Center for the Education and Study of Diverse Populations. And when was that?
That was probably like 4 years ago. I'd say around 2019, 2020. So 4.5 years ago, okay. Roughly, yes.
But the center itself was created in 1990. Can you give us a little bit of background about how that came together?
Yeah.
What's the purpose of it?
Yeah, sure. So a beautiful concept that came out of Dr. Paul Martinez. There's actually been two directors prior to me, Dr. Paul Martinez and Dr. Patricia Jimenez-Latham. Paul was a former student at Eastern New Mexico University. He's actually from Española, the Española area. And so, again, a similar trajectory, really was a product of the Movimiento, you know, coming out of the Movimiento, being part of that, and being part of the Serna versus Portales ruling, the court case that really pushed the Clovis Portales area to provide services to students whose primary home language was Spanish. And so I think that really began to determine the trajectory ultimately of Dr. Paul and his desire to create a center that really is a service to the community. And when I say that, a service to the community that's culturally and linguistically gifted, we like to say in my circles. Typically, people will say, culturally and linguistically, individuals that are kind of growing in those areas. We prefer to say gifted. I think it really does describe the reality that exists there. And Paul created this center to, you know, develop leadership, to create legislation, dabble in policymaking that would affect in a positive way public education within the state of New Mexico, and also provide supports and services to kind of bridge that policy work, right? And so doing things like supporting, whether it be principals, educational leaders, educators themselves, teachers in the classroom, to develop specific skill sets around bilingual education, around supporting emerging bilingual students and their connections to English, to really support those areas as strongly as possible. But then even more so to develop leadership within community and to build bridges and develop partnerships between parents and communities, as well as the public school systems that are there to serve these parents and communities, create opportunities to bridge legislators to actual community members, right? Parents, families, and to guide really conversation around what are some of the strengths and what are some of the gaps, the areas in need of improvement, right, within some of our communities. And then lastly, and I think I really admire this, I think all of these areas are superb, but also looking at our youth and looking at them not through a deficit lens, but through that, very strong optimistic lens of really creating space for our children who are linguistically and culturally gifted to explore avenues towards leadership and to recognize that their culture and their language as strengths, assets towards that direction of becoming leaders within our own communities.
All right. And tell us about the center's made a lot of contributions to a lot of things. I know that you've been very involved or the organization has been very involved with obviously bilingual and dual language programming here in New Mexico. You've also had something to do with developing AVID curriculum. No, you've done some modeling, I think, on family and community partnering. Maybe you can talk about some of these things and how they came about, and what are the relevance of them to education and dual language education today?
Wow, yeah, no, it really, I think, begins to speak to the idea of creating this network of not only programming, but also supports throughout New Mexico. And what I mean by that, I mean, you mentioned AVID and our efforts to support and bring such programming to New Mexico, but also in LACE, engaging Latino communities for education and creating that space to really support and mentor our youth in areas around career and college readiness. That has been an area that really we've tried to aspire to continue to grow in. I think it really aligns with what I had mentioned a little bit earlier around one of those dreams, one of those focus areas of Dr. Paul Martinez about supporting youth leadership. Mm-hmm. And also that idea of family and community partnership. One thing that I could say is that we created something that was the Back to School Institute. That B2SI Institute has around 25 years of existence where we were really functioning in a very unique fashion and creating an institute, a conference, if you will, specifically for parents and family members to explore what are their leadership capacities, to identify what are the areas where they can continue to advocate in specific to public education, and then inviting in educators, whether it be educational leaders, teachers, to learn and grow in a collaborative spirit alongside our families and our parents and our community members. And then also additionally, invite that, extend that invitation out to our lawmakers, our policymakers. So that way we have this union of educators, family and community members, students, youth leaders, and policymakers all together talking about continuous improvement around education in New Mexico.
What kind of shifts, and I guess let me preface this by, it's been a very interesting experience for me because I had not worked in education before, and just I'm in a school which is all about dual language education. We have a principal that's very dedicated to dual language education, and it's interesting to me because I know where a lot of that stuff comes from in terms of the Chicano movement and how it's one of the things that really was accomplished by the movement here, no, was bilingual education. And the kids that are getting bilingual seals these days, at my school at least, they tend to be Mexicanos. They tend to be immigrants. Tell us about this transition as you've viewed it, and how is bilingual education still impacting Nuevo Mexicanos in the Chicano community?
Absolutely. No, fantastic question. And I just want to start out by, saying that, I celebrate our immigrant communities coming into New Mexico. It's a wonderful way to recharge our Spanish-speaking communities in many instances. I think it's a great opportunity to regenerate that interest and that spark the possibilities for continuing forward with that linguistic treasure, one of those many linguistic treasures that we have here in New Mexico, alongside our indigenous community members in those indigenous languages. And so, when you speak of the bilingual seal, particularly here in Albuquerque, I think that there's a higher membership of a lot of our immigrant communities, but the further you go north, there are other instances of various community members. I think what the bilingual seal has done and dual language education programming, bilingual education programming, is it's created a space for our youth to begin to explore and have access to pathways to rediscover that linguistic treasure, as I admit, that linguistic gift that in some instances has waned over the years with some of our latter generations in New Mexico of Native Nuevo Mexicanos. And it really does give them that pathway and that access, that opportunity. I think it's a question of ensuring that at the primary level, that we create that space and that invitation, not only for the students, right, at the primary level, but also for their parents to begin to explore and recharge, as I had mentioned a little bit earlier, that that connection to the Spanish language. But I do celebrate our immigrant communities because it creates the opportunity for this type of conversation about where we're going, what direction we're heading with the Spanish language in New Mexico.
Right on. Well, we're going to take a little break. I want to put on something by Dick Chavez, who accordion player, one of my favorite guys around. You can catch him playing at senior centers around Albuquerque and other places. All right. And we'll be right back with Adrian Martinez of the New Mexico Highlands University Center for the Education and Study of Diverse Populations.
Siento mucho defraudarte si pensabas que te ibas a reír de mi penar. Siento mucho defraudarte, ya no tengo ni una gota de llanto que llorar. He sentido tantas veces un fracaso, no me duele. Solo es uno más, y qué más da. Tengo tantas cicatrices en el alma que aunque quieras lastimarme no podrás. Tengo tantas cicatrices en el alma que no queda. Te ibas a reír de mi penar. Siento mucho defraudarte, ya no tengo ni una gota de llanto que llorar. He sentido tantas veces un fracaso, no me duele fracasar una vez más. He sentido tantas veces un desprecio. ¿Qué más da? Tengo tantas cicatrices en el alma y aunque quieras lastimarme no podrás. Tengo tantas cicatrices en el alma que no queda.
And if you just joined us here on Espejos de Aslan, we are talking tonight with Adrian Martinez, Adrian Sandoval. Oh, I know why I said that, because I'm reading off a sheet and I saw, yeah, whatever. Adrian Sandoval, who is the director of the Center for the Education and Study of Diverse Populations. And Adrian, we were talking about, you know, kind of how the center couches his work, no? But I wondered if you could talk to us about what kind of specific things you're involved in. For example, you know, I got to know you because we did a project to help forward the development of land grant and acequia curriculum, no? And, you know, so you're tying together a lot of different things in ways that won't be surprising to a lot of our listeners. Tell us about some of the work that the center is engaged in now.
Absolutely, Luis. And so I'd say around 4.5 years ago, Senator Pete Campos out of San Miguel County was kind enough to really encourage the center and support us to begin to contemplate what's called the Acequia Land Grant Education Project. Mm-hmm. And as I say that, I want to give a quick shout out to also the Land Grant Studies group here out of UNM, as well as the Acequia Association out of Northern New Mexico, the New Mexico Acequia Association, just for their amazing support with this effort. And so, yeah, we're basically creating a curriculum, a number of different lesson plans, unit plans that teachers can use and have free access to, can shift and change however they need to in order to make sure that it speaks to their community, right? And really supports ultimately to get students reconnected with a sense of I would say responsibility, a sense of I guess connectedness, querencia, right? The love of place once mm-hmm. again, in order to make sure that as the years go by, they will be the next acequeros. They will have that deep understanding and that cultural connection, that land and water connection to the amazing environment that surrounds us here in New Mexico. They'll be the next farmers, and they'll have that deeper level understanding of not to sell their land, not to sell their water rights. And at the same time, learn through different disciplines, right? Because it's so interesting, Luis, is that when we talk about the Acequia Land Grant Education Project, you can really learn about all the different disciplines, whether it be math, science, social studies, mm-hmm. history, even language. Regenerating, we talked about regenerating a language a little bit earlier, and it's a wonderful pathway to reconnect students to elders, reconnect students to land and water, and do a variety of things with that. Besides that, we also have something that we're working on that's called, it's called the Drawing from the Well curriculum. And that Drawing from the Well curriculum is an excellent opportunity. It creates a space for taking students, again, out into the community to learn about some of these funds of knowledge that in many instances have been swept under the rug, have been ignored. But nevertheless, support our students to have a deep sense of identity, to have a connection once again to the elders that are there to provide that safety net in their communities, and to take things back and celebrate those, as opposed to always questioning, well, where am I at in this curriculum? Mm-hmm. They have a deliberate opportunity as young investigators to research that, bring that research back, and share it with the rest of the school community.
You know, this whole thing of cultural sustainability is such a huge question. If you look back historically, the Chicano movement of the 60s and 70s really put a lot of things on the map. You know, you started to see more culturally relevant studies programs in a lot of schools, although it was always a battle. I remember the situation when I was involved in the redo of 450 years of Chicano history, and 500 years came out of it. Man, that's like 34 years ago. It's amazing how time flies, no? And then you had the Court of Assisters getting in trouble out in Vaughan for using it as their curriculum. We'd see that popping up. There was a lot of movement in that direction, and a lot of people came out of that, or like yourself, coming along maybe a little bit later. You were deeply influenced by that. It had everything, I think, to do with what you're doing, no? What are the challenges today in terms of cultural sustainability, rejuvenating the culture, what, you know, however we want to look at it, that you see?
You know, I think it's really kind of tapping the brakes on where we're at with our education system. Yazi Martinez is kind of speaking to this as well. Yeah. But it really is just recognizing that there is knowledge. There's always been knowledge, a knowledge that has been ignored, within our own communities that, lo and behold, had helped us to sustain ourselves, to flourish within this part of what we now call the U.S., this part of the Southwest, this region, and we did so very well. And so it really invites us to support students to reconnect themselves with these funds of knowledge, as I alluded to them as being earlier, that are both culturally connected, culturally rooted, linguistically rooted, that have gravitas, right? They've been here for, as you mentioned, 400 years. And then when we look at our connection to our indigenous communities, it's been here for millennia. And within that fusion, within that amazing combination, there are a lot of things that we can learn about sustaining our communities, sustaining our connections to the land and water that surround us, even more so now as our climate continues to change, and as we begin to think about, you know, how do we continue to be prosperous with our gardens and our farms in ways that are contributing to us as communities, and not just always growing alfalfa, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. And how do we develop sustainable food systems that actually work, not just as something that's important for cultural sustainability, but cultural sustenance, but also for everybody, right? That's something we all got to figure out. You mentioned the Yazzie Martinez case. How do you see that benefiting what you're doing and the stuff you're talking about, the issues you're talking about?
I think it's very much rooted in a lot of the work that CSDP has attempted to do over the years. In many instances, it's somewhat difficult to, when you're functioning as in isolation, even within your own state, let's say, or your own region. But I think what has happened now with Yazzie Martinez is that it really has come to the surface, and it has supported perhaps easier, the potential for easier conversations with school leaders at the district level and at specific school site levels. Because I think now what has happened is that the environment has been created for us to begin to think about innovative ways of really supporting culturally and linguistically sustaining practices within our classroom. Too often we were taught, we were told that being inclusive of culture and language within the classroom was to the detriment of students and family members, when in reality it's not. I think I'm an example of that. Multiple individuals in New Mexico that have participated in bilingual education, high quality bilingual education programming. Lewis, yourself, your connection to language and culture really has supported you to have significant, opportunities to affect positive change within our communities. And I think, again, that's really what Yazzie Martinez has supported public schools to do, is to recognize what's been in their backyard all these years for multiple generations. And instead of ignoring it or putting it on the side or sweeping it under the carpet, how do we be inclusive of that to support our students to move forward with a strong sense of identity, and with that identity to move forward confidently as they begin to develop a bigger, broader sense academically?
All right. We've been talking with Adrian, why am I?
It's on the wall.
It's, you know, something's going on in my brain tonight. But something's always going on in my brain these days when I get on the air. Talking with Adrian Sandoval, who is the director of the Center for the Education and Study of Diverse Populations, that's run out of New Mexico Highlands University. And it's been great having you here. This is a short program. No, we run out of time, because there's a lot of additional stuff we can talk about, and hopefully we'll have the opportunity to do that again in the future.
Loved it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. You have a great evening. And folks, stay tuned for Raices right after these messages.